Can we just start right off by sharing your story? I think that's what people want to hear the most is your heart transplant story.
Yeah, so I heart failure is the last thing that would have been on my mind when I was getting sick in the summer of 2012 and I was noting increasing symptoms. I actually presented to the hospital in October of 2012, and when I finally presented with my heart failure, they decided to keep me in the hospital as a primary bridge to my transplant. So I ended up being in the hospital for a total of 51 nights in the hospital myself. I kind of knew after about 4 or 5 days in the hospital, when I was discussing things with my transplant cardiologist, I was really kind of aware that they did not think I was going to get better. So I was kind of having to deal with the reality that my life was going to be forever changed and I wasn't going to be getting better. So, you know, it was a gradual process for me, but I really kind of tried to keep a positive aspect, a positive view on things about how I could really kick this thing and I could get back to my old self and doing the things I used to love doing. You know, I was in the hospital for 51 nights, and that forever changed my perspective as a patient and as a patient advocate. And it also made me very empathetic with what our providers and what our mission partners at OSF have to kind of go through on a daily basis. So it has been quite the journey for me. It definitely changes your perspective on life and what's truly important as well. So.
Where are you originally from? Are you from this area? Where are you from?
I'm from Nashville, Tennessee, born and raised, and I went my undergraduate degree at Rice in Houston, Texas. And I actually went to medical school in Alabama. My parents had moved to Auburn, Alabama by that time, and my dad worked at Auburn University. And I did 2 years in Birmingham and 2 years in Huntsville before actually coming up to Illinois to do my residency at OSF at St. Francis. Actually, I was a med-peds resident there for 4 years before moving to Chicago. So that's kind of a story of my journey.
Were you always interested in cardiac, getting into that side of it? What was your specialty? What were you interested in getting into medicine?
Yeah, my specialty was internal medicine and pediatrics. I did a lot of critical care. So I did deal with a lot of patients that had heart failure and had ischemic heart disease and those kind of things. So I spent more than a decade taking direct care of a lot of patients like that. And so, you know, I always knew the importance of us treating with our patients with heart conditions. My experience with heart failure kind of transformed the way that I think about the way we deal with patients with heart disease and heart failure and other heart issues as well. So.
Why is sharing information about your own heart health journey so important to you? I know you talked a little bit about that when we were talking about your story, but why is it so important to you when you talk about that experience that patients have?
The reason why it's so important to me is because I think that I really think that when patients have symptoms that they really should not delay seeing a provider or seeing a physician and trying to get the care they need. I delayed my own journey, and thankfully nothing happened to me long-term as a result of it, but I definitely was at risk myself of that. And sometimes women present very atypically with heart disease, specifically with coronary artery disease or ischemic heart disease, and they can present very atypically. So if you note any changes in your usual state of health and, it's over any time whatsoever, you really need to, it's really important for us to get checked out when we have that thing. I delayed my own care and thankfully nothing happened to me, but it totally changed the way that I view when I have symptoms myself and the importance of getting checked out. So it's changed my attitude about that. So I think, you know, when you hear a doctor was not the best at checking himself out, but his journey has been transformed by his own, by my own heart condition It definitely, you know, I think a physician telling you, you know, that we have the same issues, but we really have to change the way we think about our own symptoms. I think hopefully that resonates with most of our communities and most of our patients.
That's right. Well, it's so important to be talking about this all the time, but in the month of February, there's an opportunity to really raise awareness about heart health.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, the entire month.
Yeah, because it is American Heart Month, and OSF is very proud to join with the AHA or the American Heart Association to kind of raise awareness about the risk of heart attack and stroke and what we can kind of do to reduce those risk factors that are modifiable. So, yes.
That's right. Well, it's the facts are that heart disease is the leading cause of death for men and women in the United States, correct?
Yeah, yes, that is correct. And one in four deaths is caused by heart disease. And heart disease can often be prevented if we can do the things that we can change. You know, you can't change your family history or those kind of things. But if you make healthier choices, if you try to control your blood pressures, if we try to move more and be more physically active, and if we try to lessen other risk as well, you know, it's very valuable. And OSF, actually, at osfhealthcare.org, you can work on going online and typing in your heart risk assessment so that you can learn your own risk of having a heart attack or stroke as well. So there are resources available. You know, even the OSF Healthcare website has resources for patients to seek things online. And that way, then they can know if it's important for them to get themselves checked out or not. So
right, Dr. Brooks, can we share with folks what some of those risks are of having heart disease? What are some of those risks?
Yeah, some of the non-modifiable ones are our age, as we know, and our family history. But most of the other ones are things we can modify. It really goes back to diabetics and controlling their blood sugar. It really goes back to the way we exercise and our physical activity. It really goes back to quitting smoking. It really goes back to the kind of diet we eat. It really goes back to managing our blood pressures, especially if it's high. It really goes back to managing your weight and trying to lose weight if you're overweight or happen to be obese. It often goes back to pre-existing heart disease as well, or those if you've already had a heart attack. Obviously, it's too late to change the outcome for the first one, but if you can modify those risk factors, hopefully you can prevent that from happening again.
Yeah. Recently, we celebrated National Wear Red Day. What was behind that effort?
You know, people are really encouraged to wear red and decorate their houses because more women die of heart disease and stroke than men. It is the number one killer in men and women, and it also takes one of three lives for women every year. So, and according to the American Heart Association, like I mentioned earlier, chest pain is not your typical symptoms for some women. 64% of women who die suddenly of heart disease actually had no previous symptoms. So, the symptoms vary greatly. It can be extreme chest pain, but women are much more likely to experience atypical symptoms like nausea, vomiting, you know, back pain. Sometimes the pain radiates up to your jaw and your chin area, and also they have more shortness of breath as well. If women are dizzy, if they're lightheaded, if they're fatigued, you know, obviously any kind of pain in the chest or upper abdomen, the upper part of your stomach, fatigue, these are all things that women can experience, which are more atypical, but yet can be symptoms of having heart disease. So,
2 years ago this May, I actually had a heart attack when I was driving down Henderson Street to a client appointment, and it felt like heartburn. I didn't go to the hospital. Well, luckily, it didn't go away, so I finally ended up going, and I had two stents put in. The one thing that my cardiologist told me, tell more men that if you have these issues, don't ignore it. Too often, you had mentioned this, we ignore that sign.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know what? I had problems about, before I presented with my heart failure, actually, I was unable to exercise like I used to do it. And you know what? I used to go to the gym every day for the longest time at about 6 weeks or so before I presented to the hospital with my symptoms. I just stopped exercising, and I said, "Oh, I'm just stressed. I was attributing it to stress. I'm overworked. I had spent years of my life working, 250, 300 plus hours a month, which is obviously way too much for most people. And I was just saying, I just need to give my body time to rest for a couple of weeks. And it really was rationalizing symptoms when we really need to go to our doctor. You need to go to your internist or your internal medicine doctor, if that's who you see. You really should be going to your family physician or your cardiologist and and saying, hey, something is not right with me. You know, I was sweating a lot. And before I presented to the hospital, I was even having some chest pressure myself because I think my heart was getting tired of trying to pump so hard for so long. So
yeah,
if you feel things that are different or atypical, you really do need to get evaluated, especially, yes, a lot of people say that heartburn is a symptom. It's like, oh, I just feel like I can't swallow as well, or my heart, but that may be equivalent of, you know, or I have pressures in my chest. You know, it doesn't be a stabbing, like, oh, it's just like excruciating kind of a symptom. It could be things such as the heartburn, such as chest pressure, and men that are things that we sometimes ignore. You know, and I did the bench press yesterday at the gym, and today I'm having some chest pressure. Oh, it's just because I overdid the bench press at the gym, and that may not always be the case.
Isn't it a part of you know, I thought that I was going to be embarrassed by going to the emergency room for heartburn. That really was my thought, was I'm not going to go there, and they're just going to laugh at me because I had a heartburn.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. For me, I was going on a 50th birthday trip with a friend of mine. So I think I knew on some level that I checked myself out that I wouldn't be able to go to the 50th birthday party. If mine would have been heart disease and I would have been ignoring chest pain from a heart attack, then I had not even made it to the 50th birthday party, let alone the ones to follow, you know? So it is really important to take care of yourself. Again, I cannot tell people enough that when you note something different about yourself, that you really need to get yourself checked out, that symptoms are not to be ignored. Whether it's symptoms related to heart disease, whether it's symptoms related to stroke, you know, people think, oh, I just, you know, even when it comes to stroke and things like that, it's like, you know, it's like, oh, I just had some numbness in my arm for 6 hours and it's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, that may very well be what's called a TIA or a transient ischemic attack. And that may be the precursor of a stroke as well. You know, so please try not to blow off symptoms and say, oh, my arm is just numb for a while just because I slept the wrong way, or just because, you know, just because I did something different exercising. Why? It really is important to get yourself checked out and go to a provider. You know, even if you don't want to go to the ER, call your doctor and say, hey, do you have a time to come? I've been really feeling something different. You know, can you squeeze me in the next couple of days and go see your doctor in the outpatient clinic setting? So, yes.
Now, here you are at you'll be coming up on your 10th anniversary of your transplant in 2022.
Yes.
Are you planning a big celebration, or is every day a celebration for you?
Actually, I one of my goals is to go to Patagonia. It's in South America. It's a big region of South America, and I want to go to South America for about 2.5 weeks or so. So I have already mentioned it to friends of mine that I really want to go to Patagonia. And, you know, since I've actually overcome what I've gone through, actually, I've made a new love of national parks. So my goal is to go to a national park every year, go to a new national park that I haven't visited before. You know, and so last year I visited Mammoth Cave National Park and Yellowstone National Park for the first time. You know, and, you know, it is important when you go through something like what you and I have gone through. It really is important to do the things you enjoy in life and do what's important to you. But absolutely, the 10th year is going to be, I'd love for as many of my friends that want to go to Patagonia with me to go to Patagonia. We can fly to Buenos Aires and we're going to fly back from Santiago. So I'm really looking forward to it.
And the outlook for a heart transplant patient, are you a unique story, or is this, are you the best case scenario? I mean, as long as it's been, or you know.
You know what? The outcomes with heart transplants are getting better and better all the time. The last data I think that I saw, I just saw it earlier this week, actually. I think I saw some heart transplant survival data on the people that got heart transplants in 2012 and 2017. And, you know, if you really do overcome those first couple of years, as long as you keep yourself healthy and active and you don't have a lot of other comorbidities, actually, believe it or not, outside of hypertension, which I was diagnosed with in the hospital, I had no other health issues. Yeah. So it was really just my heart. So for a person like me, you know, I was 43 when I received my heart transplant. So, you know, I was quite young. But yeah, if you're otherwise healthy and you can, again, control those risk factors and can, you know, for people like me, if we can do the things it takes to control our blood pressure and our cholesterol issue, the outcomes are getting better and better for heart transplant recipients.
Dr. Brooks, you've been very generous with your time. I know you have to go. Thank you so much, and best to you, and thank you for everything you do.
Yeah. And yeah, my story is, you know, it's rather unusual for people in their 40s to get heart transplants, you know, so yeah, so, you know, but again, you can be in your 40s or your 50s or your 60s. And again, if you just have hypertension or you just have diabetes and you control it and stuff like that, and you're active and you're, you know, and you can keep the weight off, you know, the outcomes really are getting better and better for heart transplant patients.
Steve, thank you so much for joining us today on Galesburg Live.
Happy to be here.
So last week, your brother was here.
Yes. Hard act to follow.
Yeah. And then I didn't realize that we were making it February is the Davis Brothers month. So I thought that was interesting when Steve sat down to talk. He said, you know, my brother was just here last week. I went, yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, and Mark did a great job.
He did. He really did.
Yeah. But yeah, we're going to talk about this weekend. We're talking about matters of the heart. And I know that you've had a recent heart health journey. And I thought it would be a great thing to discuss here on the show, because there are a lot of people who are in the same situation
sure.
as you have been.
Yes.
And I'd like to jump right into it. And let's talk about just what happened to you. This goes back well over a year.
Well over a year.
Okay, so what was going on?
Probably 18 months.
Okay.
I was laid off from my job at the Register Mail.
Mm-hmm.
They laid off photo editors all across the country. And was hired really quickly at Knox College to be the school photographer. And, you know, there was a learning curve involved, and there was stress. Losing a job is never easy.
Yeah.
Kind of knew it was coming, but still it hit. And over the course of time at Knox, I began to notice a tension in my shoulders. Sometimes it was accompanied by a little bit of labored breathing, but there was no real pain or any other physical indication. And I was still freelancing for the newspaper, so I would be covering a sporting event. And I was a musician in a band that was very active, and I was just kind of running myself to death.
Yeah.
And
probably not eating very well.
Well at all. No,
yeah,
I didn't eat well to begin with.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'd stop. I tell you what would happen once in a while, and I'm not embarrassed to talk about this anymore because I really feel like maybe there's somebody who feels the same way. But
yeah.
I would be driving down the road, and I would start to get lightheaded and, you know, a little nauseous. And I would pull into a gas station, and I'd grab a diet soda thinking, okay, it's diet. And, you know, a couple of candy bars and some crackers.
Yeah.
And I would eat it. Well, it was my blood sugar.
Uh-huh.
And that was a quick fix. You know, 15 minutes later, I was feeling fine. And so that was kind of at the beginning of this. But there are other photographers that I would work with. Roger Perry is a good friend of mine.
Sure.
From Knoxville. He's a photographer. And I would see him at a game, and I would say, man, my chest is just really tight. It doesn't hurt, but I just feel like I'm really tired. And he's a paramedic. He's an EMT. And
yeah.
He's like, you know, you just can't let that go.
Yeah.
And so I would I remember it was in February. I saw him at a game in Macomb, and that was a night it was pretty bad.
Yeah.
I was in a meeting with you. And I had no idea that you had been through a situation like this.
Right. I had had a heart attack in May of 2019.
Yes.
And had a couple stents put in. So
I had no idea.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you remember or not, but I sat and I peppered you with questions.
Oh, yeah.
Did you feel this? Did you feel this? Did you feel this? And so I kind of knew something was going on.
And what did I tell you then? You need to go see
somebody. Yeah, you said the same thing.
You need to get it taken care of. Yeah, because you and I are men of a certain age.
You know,
we're in our 50s.
Correct.
And this is not something that I didn't go to the doctor because I thought it was heartburn.
Sure.
And which was really the pretty stupid thing to do because I could have, you
I'm
know,
so embarrassed I could about have the things I didn't
I
do.
I know. I'm certainly embarrassed about it, but go ahead.
I didn't, you know, my wife knew that I was uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I complained once on Facebook
yeah.
to a bunch of people that, you know, I don't they're Facebook friends, but I said that I had heartburn one night, and I had a lot of people tell me, hey, that's not a good thing.
Yeah.
I didn't mention anything else other than I've got heartburn tonight. Mm-hmm. And I still not don't know if that was part of it, but you know, my wife was like, hey, you know, you can tell me this stuff too.
Yeah.
But I really didn't want – I was scared.
Yeah.
I was at Knox, we would have meetings, and I was having trouble focusing and remembering things. And we were having some changeover at the time at the school, and you know, there was a meeting that I even walked outside. I just felt like I was going to burst.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, no pain. I just felt so much tension.
Yeah.
And then on February 22nd, my wife and our daughter, who lives at home, they were out of town, and I was up all night. We had a dog that passed away unexpectedly, and I was up with that dog all night. And, you know, soon as the vet opened, I took her in and we had her put down. And I got back to our house, and it was just me and our other dog. And, I always talk to the dog. And I put my shoes on and I stood up and I started to go down.
Oh, boy.
And I grabbed the keychain. I have remote start in my car. Yeah. And I stumbled out the door and I started the car and I kind of leaned against it and I got my bearings. And of course, I just went, you're just tired. You know, everything's fine.
Any rational person would be saying, you know, could somebody take me to the hospital?
Yeah. What's going on?
I'm
or at
an
least
issue.
Say, what's happening?
Yeah,
and,
right.
You know, unbeknownst to me, we had a gig that night in, this was right before COVID started in. So we had a gig. My brother, unbeknownst to me, texted guitar player in our band and say, something's wrong with Steve. Keep an eye on him.
Yeah.
I didn't even know he had done that. So I got there for the gig and I'm telling them the guys what had happened. And I'm like, I'll be fine, but let's just not do a marathon tonight. And we didn't. And the next day I had an assignment at the college on a Sunday and I shot it. And as I was walking back to my car, it was a cold day. And I have a really big camera bag. And here came that tension between my shoulders, and I was having a little bit of trouble breathing. And so I texted Julie and said, I'm going to go to the emergency room.
Oh,
just see what's going on.
Yeah. Steve Davis is our guest in this part of our first hour of Galesburg Live. And he's talking about his heart journey. So you're having all of it. It's been going on for weeks, maybe months.
Months
going on for months. You've seen the signs for months.
Yes.
And you still hadn't done anything until that day when you said, okay, I'm going to go see the doctor. What happened then?
They did an EKG.
Okay.
And blood work. And it was all negative.
All negative?
All negative.
Nothing's wrong with you?
Nothing.
Okay.
So I'm like, okay, I know something's wrong. It's not in my head, but it may not be my heart.
Yeah.
So my doctor, Jeremy Carrier, he's my primary physician. He's a wonderful doctor. I called him.
Yeah.
The hospital talked to him, and he said, if you feel bad, go back, and they'll probably just admit you.
Hmm.
The next day, I felt worse, and I went back, and the EKG was negative.
Oh, my gosh.
And so I was only there an hour. They were – and it's no fault of OSF. Everything looked okay.
Yeah, sure.
My blood pressure was fine.
Sure.
And so I saw Dr. Carrier the next day. I went to his office and had an exam. While he was listening to my lungs, he said, what is up with this mole on your shoulder? And I said, Julie said it's not looking right, but I can't see it. This is kind of my attitude on everything.
Yeah, right.
Well, he said, I'm going to send you to Dr. Davis and we'll do a biopsy. So, and he goes, and then we're going to have you, you're going to do a stress test. Something's going on.
Sure.
So the next day was the stress test. And it wasn't until the very end of the stress test that Dr. Patty said, oh, I see something.
Oh, boy.
And they couldn't get me going fast enough. They have to get you rolling. And,
you got to run on that thing.
Yeah, and, yeah, and, basically.
Yeah. And
I couldn't really do that. And,
yeah.
But it was the very last minute. And he's like, yeah, we're going to. Give me a minute. And while I was sitting there waiting, I got a text from Dr. Davis saying, I need to see you on Monday.
Oh, my gosh.
So it was
all of this is happening at once.
At the same time.
Oh, my gosh.
And so it was a melanoma.
Yeah.
And it was cancerous.
Hmm.
So, but he got most of it.
Yeah.
Dr. Davis, when he did the biopsy. And then when Dr. Patty came back in the room, he's like, we're going to do an angiogram and for a stent.
Yeah.
You've got some blockage in there. I won't know how much until they get you in there.
Yeah.
So I had that.
You went in for the angiogram.
Yes.
Where they take the, and they went in the groin area.
Is that they went through my wrist.
Oh,
actually.
They did your wrist. They did mine down there. And well, they give you lots of really good drugs, though. You don't really,
yes.
You don't really feel a whole lot.
Well, it's amazing because when you have that procedure, you're awake.
Yes,
and
it was weird.
You know, I was a little bit out of it, but I know they remember them talking to me, and I thought, I've been in here for an hour. I was in there for 10 minutes because they got in there and said, you're really blocked, and it's in a really bad place. So I'll meet you in a minute.
You've had the angiogram. You're in the middle of it. They said they found blockages, and it's in a really bad place. What did they mean?
It was the largest vessel that enters the heart. They call it – I'm not sure of the scientific name, but they use the word widowmaker.
Widowmaker.
Which tells you exactly what it is. It's I had had back in 2010 – I had a pulmonary embolism. Mm. I had a fall at Knox. I'm kind of famous for that. I fell down the hill at Knox College, and I had some surgery. And after the surgery, my blood didn't clot right. And I had a clot that moved. It was a saddle embolism, which means it was sitting on my heart and my lungs.
Oh, my gosh.
And that was treated in Galesburg. It was treated chemically.
Yeah.
So when I first get done – the doctor said, you know, we got to think about that, but this is definitely at the tip of the widowmaker, and I'll meet you in the room.
Yeah.
So they wheeled me back, and I looked at Julie. She goes, oh, my God, that was so fast. I'm like, yeah, nothing's happened yet. And he said, you're going to definitely have to have a bypass. It might be two bypasses. It might be three bypasses. We won't know till we get in there.
So Steve Davis is our guest here. So you've just been told that instead of having stents, which they're going to put those little things, they open up the vessels and then you go home, you're now going to have open heart surgery.
Correct.
What is going through your mind?
Well, you know, honestly, I hope people don't take this the wrong way. I was never like freaking out, scared or fearful. And, you know, there was a piece that just the right thing is happening. A big deal part of it is that I didn't have pain. Pain was not an issue for me yet.
Sure.
I was feeling really tired by this point, and I was still having memory problems. Mm. I could remember, you know, baseball statistics from 40 years ago, but I couldn't remember what I had to eat or somebody's name. It would take a minute to come to me. Mm. And so my wife was with me, and they said, you know, we'll schedule you this. We'll schedule with the surgeon. And then I got home, and it was scheduled. I can't remember the exact date, but I got a call 3 days ahead of time, and they said, well, due to COVID, what you're having done, we all know it was serious, but it's not an elective surgery. And we need
to keep... Or it is an elective surgery.
Yeah, this is an elective surgery, and we need the beds just in case.
For COVID,
So you're going to wait.
So this was happening in March of last year, April?
Yes, April.
So this is the height of the COVID pandemic. Just everybody's, you know, we're all jacked about it. And you're looking at the prospect of having open heart surgery in the midst of everything.
Right.
So they put it off, but then...
They put it off two more times.
Two more times.
I was rolling with the punches. The third one... was pretty upsetting. I was pretty frustrated. I cried a little.
Yeah.
Because we also found out that I could not have anybody there with me.
Yeah. COVID, you can't. You have to go in for open heart surgery by yourself.
Yes.
That's and for seven days?
7 days.
Seven
I was in there for 7 days.
So they finally said that you're able to have the surgery.
Right.
And they've got this scheduled. That morning, I'm sure your wife and family, didn't they bring you to the hospital?
Julie and Abby drove me over.
Okay,
and,
your daughter,
One of my bandmates, my band is based out of Peoria, one of my bandmates was there with his family, and they had big signs.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just meant the world to me.
Yeah.
But I got out of the car, and they put me in a wheelchair and wheeled me in and went through the paperwork and the pre-op and...
And all of that without your family there.
Yeah.
That's talk about stressful.
It was stressful, but the people at OSF were so... wonderful.
We're taking St. Francis.
Yeah, St. Francis.
Right.
And they were just amazing. They knew They knew it's like, you know, tough luck, but everybody's going through this.
Of course.
And I try to keep my sense of humor and, you know, they're, as they're wheeling me in, I'm telling my stupid dad jokes and they laugh at them just because it makes me feel better.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember going in this room and looking at the bed and I said, I'm going to fit on that. You know, it was just a tiny little bed.
Yeah.
And the doctor said there were probably 20 people in there.
Oh, boy.
In this operating room. And I know I'm already a little sedated.
Yeah.
You know, they calm you down. But I really just – I wasn't too worried about it. I knew I was going to fall asleep and I was going to wake up, hopefully. But I was going to wake up and it was going to be all over.
Yeah.
And really the doctor said, can we pray for you? And I said, yeah, absolutely.
Mm.
And they all gathered around and prayed. And the next thing I know, they're wheeling me out of there. I mean,
you were done.
I didn't even hear the whole prayer. Yeah, I was done.
Oh, wow.
The bed had a scale on it, and I remember the nurse saying, 233 pounds. And I said, what? I gained weight. That was my first response.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I tell this to people not to belittle everything that happened, but that, you know, it was there was some fear, but it was really my mind was put at ease by a lot.
So Steve Davis is our guest talking about his heart journey. He had a bypass. So how many bypasses?
Triple
bypass.
They found a 98% blockage.
My gosh. In the Widowmaker.
In the Widowmaker.
The worst place for the killer of men.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah,
it's the one where you hear people, they just dropped dead.
I've had several friends who that happened to,
boy.
To them.
Yeah.
And
so you get out of surgery. And you woke up. You don't have your family there. Were you able to communicate with them through
I was able to,
video?
First off, the hospital did an amazing job of they basically stayed on the phone with Julie most of the time and talked her through it. It was I think I was in for 6 hours.
You were in surgery for 6 hours.
Yes.
They crack your chest. They take your heart out of your body.
In this case, yes, they did. Yes.
Do the bypass.
What I found out later is that thin little table that I saw.
Yeah.
Basically, they turn you into a gymnast of sorts,
you're
arched, severely arched.
Oh. Wow.
You know, I still have some issues with back and ribs because they have to get to that, so they basically tie you back.
Yeah.
And you know, I came to, then I felt pain.
Oh.
I had never had pain before this. You know, I had tubes, drainage tubes, the three of them. And we started walking that day.
They got you up walking.
Yes. Amazing. They get you up and walk. And the more you walk, the sooner you can get out of there. And I did have the first night, I'm a type 2 diabetic. And I did have my blood sugar just went out of control.
Yeah.
In fact, so the first night I ended up, they had to tie me down.
Oh, boy.
I thought that I had been taken captive in a submarine by my nurses. I kept saying, you've got to call my wife. And Julie really didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
It was that serious.
Oh, my gosh.
And so they got it under control. They were giving me insulin, you know, every hour. And after that, it was relatively smooth sailing. Very uncomfortable to have those tubes.
Oh, boy.
And the next to the last day, the doctor came, a physician's assistant came in and goes, tubes are coming out today.
Ouch.
I said, is this going to hurt? He said, hell yeah, it's going to hurt. And he literally, I'm going to count to three. He got to two and they just basically pull them out of your body.
Wow.
From they start at your stomach line.
Oh.
And I tell people this because I survived it and really it's over so fast. And it hurt a little, but the relief of having that pressure in your chest, those tubes being in there, was just phenomenal.
Yeah.
And and then the next day, 7 days later, Julie came and picked me up. They took me, put me in a car.
Oh.
I stopped and had a Popeye's chicken sandwich on the way home because I hadn't eaten any. Probably shouldn't say that out loud.
But it was all clear, liquids and all that, right, that you were eating before?
They have a heart healthy diet.
Gotcha. Yeah.
That I followed for a while.
Yeah, sure.
But got home And
how soon did you start? Steve Davis is our guest. We have just a couple more minutes here, sure. But now let's flash forward here. You sure. have been in cardiac rehab at
yes.
St. Mary Medical Center, right?
Yes, here in Galesburg.
And they've got a great. That's where I went through for my 12 weeks.
They're so fantastic
yeah.
and
wonderful.
You know, they don't judge. And my wife, after I finished the first session, I did have to have some follow up surgery from the biopsy. I had to have some skin grafts and some other things. So I was once again restricted.
Sure.
And
you weren't able to move as much, right?
Right. Okay. And once I was unrestricted, Julie went with me for a while out
Wonderful.
There. You can still go there.
Yeah.
You just have to pay a little bit.
And, yeah. So how has life changed for you since you had this happen? You look great.
Well, I lost a lot of weight.
You look like you've lost some weight, yeah.
Yeah, if you believe 233 pounds, which is probably pretty accurate, even though I told the nurse she was nuts.
They had their thumb on it. They had their thumb on the scale.
She goes, it's a digital scale. It can't be wrong. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I lost like 18 pounds.
Yeah,
and
nice.
Pretty quickly. And then I just want to say that, you know, around the beginning of December, I started falling into some bad habits.
Okay.
Particularly eating. And I wasn't working out because I was restricted and ended up with a urgently high blood sugar rating the day after Christmas and made it through the weekend fine. But, you know, it's you feel really yucky when your blood sugar is off. And through Dr. Carrier and Dr. Patty and Dr. Geoffroy, who's oncologist, you know, they came up with, Dr. Patty's like, you got to exercise. And he said it 50 times in one appointment. And he was right. We bought an exercise bike. Julie does this with me. I've been so blessed to have a wife who had the ability to help me through this and be at home with me. And she worked full time at the same time. So she had two and a half full time jobs.
She's a saint.
She really is.
Yeah, she is.
And, she, you know, she does all the cooking. I can't cook.
Yeah.
But we are now on a diet, and I've got my blood sugar is under control.
Wow.
And I'm feeling really good and starting to do more and be more active.
And all reports say that you've made a full recovery then?
Yes. I'm now, I see my doctors. I had an issue with, 2014, I had photographed some fires and I have some spots on my lung. So they were watching that too because they thought maybe it came from the cancer on my shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
And it apparently is not. So I'm now seeing the cardiologist and a pulmonologist. I will see them every 6 months.
My gosh.
And then next year we'll go to twice a year. And I hope to never go back.
It's hell getting old, isn't it?
It is.
But in your whole experience and again, you've changed your lifestyle. How about stress level?
I'm able to control it a little more. Yeah. I still do some freelance photography you know, I get frustrated with life like everybody, especially with this pandemic.
Yeah.
But that is such a key exercise and diet and stress management. You know, I was feeling better and I just kind of threw a lot of that out the window.
Yeah.
And I'm embarrassed to say that, but I also say that as a warning to others, you know, if you feel bad, don't be scared. And I've had people tell me that because I try to post on Facebook once in a while where I'm at, and I've had people who've gone and checked and they've found out that they have things happening. And, you know, just don't be afraid. Don't be embarrassed. Don't be ashamed. The worst thing is you're going to find out that you really need a lot of help, but you may also find out it's nothing. But at least you told somebody.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That was my experience when I didn't go. And they said, we'll give you some heartburn medicine. And then it turned out, we really need, there's something going on. So from our first guest that we had in this hour to now, the overarching theme is don't ignore symptoms.
Absolutely. That's the worst thing you can do.
Don't ignore it, because what would have happened to you?
You wouldn't. 98% blockage of, you know, one wrong move. And
Steve, you might not be here. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And when I take photos, I get down on the ground, I climb on stuff, you know, just one wrong move.
But now you've got Grant grandkids?
I do. I have a grandchild.
Yeah,
and she's our everything.
That's right.
I've got three kids, two of them live in Wisconsin, and she lives in Wisconsin, but we see them regularly.
But you've got a lot to live for.
Absolutely. And I got a daughter getting married in September.
Oh, my gosh. See, there you go.
And you know all about that, too.
Absolutely. You've got to walk that baby girl down the aisle.
Absolutely.
So, Steve, we're so glad that you're doing well, and I really appreciate you sharing your story, because you're right. It could affect somebody's life here.
You sharing your story with me totally changed my attitude.
Yeah, that came from my cardiologist. He told me, because I said, well, what else should I do? He said, you need to tell every man in your situation – tell them. Don't ignore this.
Great advice. Yeah,
absolutely.
Great advice.
Well, again, we appreciate you sharing your story, and best to you and your family, Steve.
Thanks for having me.